And now, ladies and gentlemen, the third and final act of our play. Perry was immediately surrounded by a curious laughing crowd attempting to penetrate the identity of this beast that stood by the wide doorway, eyeing the dancers with his hungry, melancholy gaze. And then Perry saw Betty standing in front of a booth. She was dressed in the costume of an Egyptian snake charmer. Her tawny hair was braided and drawn through brass rings, the effect crowned with a glittering oriental tiara. Her fair face was stained to a warm olive glow, and on her arms and the half-moon of her back writhed painted serpents with single eyes of venomous green. Her feet were in sandals, and her skirt was slit to the knees, so that when she walked, one caught a glimpse of other slim serpents painted just above her bare ankles. One about her neck was a glimmering cobra, altogether a charming costume. One that caused the more nervous among the older women to shrink away from her when she passed, and the more troublesome ones to make great talk about.
Shouldn't be allowed, and perfectly disgraceful.
But Perry, peering through the uncertain eyes of the camel, saw only her face, radiant, animated, and glowing with excitement, and her arms and shoulders, whose mobile, expressive gestures made her always the outstanding figure in any group. He was fascinated, and his fascination exercised a sobering effect on him. With a growing clarity, the events of the day came back. Rage rose within him, and with the half-formed intention of taking her away from the crowd, he started toward her. Or rather, he elongated slightly, for he had neglected to issue the preparatory command necessary to locomotion. The tawny eyes of the snake charmer turned to the camel. She leaned toward the girl beside her.
Who's that, camel?
It came with Mr. Tate. I think part of it's probably Warren Butterfield, the architect from New York. He's visiting the Tates.
Oh.
Something stirred in Betty Medill, that age-old interest of the provincial girl in the visiting man. At the end of the next dance, Betty and her partner finished up within a few feet of the camel. She reached out and gently rubbed the camel's nose.
Hello, old camel.
The camel stirred uneasily.
You afraid of me? Don't be. You see, I'm a snake charmer, but I'm pretty good at camels, too.
So,
Perry thought,
this is how much she cares. On the very day of our final rupture, she starts a flirtation with another man, an absolute stranger.
On an impulse, he gave her a soft nudge with his shoulder and waved his head suggestively toward the hall, making it clear he desired her to leave her partner and accompany him.
Bye-bye, Russ,
she said to her partner.
This old camel's got me. Where are we going, Prince of Beasts?
The noble animal made no rejoinder, but stalked gravely along in the direction of a secluded nook on the side stairs. There she seated herself, and the camel, after some seconds of confusion, which included gruff orders and sounds of a heated dispute going on in his interior, placed himself beside her, his hind legs stretching out uncomfortably across two steps.
Well, old egg, how do you like our happy party?
The old egg indicated that he liked it by rolling his head ecstatically and executing a gleeful kick with his hoofs.
This is the first time I've ever had a tete-a-tete with a man's valet round, or whatever that hump is.
Oh, he's deaf.
And blind.
I should think you'd feel rather handicapped. I mean, you can't very well toddle even if you want to.
The camel hung his head lugubriously.
I wish you'd say something. Say you like me, camel. Say you think I'm beautiful. Say you'd like to belong to the pretty snake charmer.
The camel would.
Will you dance with me, camel?
The camel would try. Betty devoted half an hour to the camel. She devoted at least a half an hour to all visiting men. It was usually sufficient. When she approached a new man, the current debutantes were accustomed to scatter right and left like a closed column deploying before a machine gun. And so, to Perry Parkhurst was awarded the unique privilege of seeing his love as others saw her. He was flirted with violently. Betty and the camel joined the crowd, her brown hand resting lightly on his shoulder, defiantly symbolizing her complete adoption of him.
Isn't it just slick? Do you think you can possibly dance?
Perry nodded enthusiastically. He felt suddenly exuberant. After all, he was here incognito talking to his love. So Perry danced the cotillion. I say dance, but that is stretching the word far beyond the wildest dreams of the jazziest terpsichorean. He suffered his partner to put her hands on his helpless shoulders and pull him here and there over the floor while he hung his head docilely over her shoulder and made futile dummy motions with his feet. His hind legs danced in a manner all their own, chiefly by hopping first on one foot and then on the other. Never being sure whether dancing was going on or not, the hind legs played safe by going through a series of steps whenever the music started playing. So the spectacle was frequently presented of the front part of the camel standing at ease and the rear keeping up a constant, energetic motion calculated to rouse a sympathetic perspiration in any soft-hearted observer. He was frequently favored. He danced first with a tall lady covered with straw.
Guess what I am?
Scarecrow?
No, silly camel. I'm a bale of hay.
I see.
Don't you dare try to eat me.
I'd like to. You're so sweet.
Each time the ringmaster shouted his call of
"Men help!"
Perry lumbered ferociously for Betty. Sometimes he reached her first, but usually his rushes were unsuccessful and resulted in intense interior arguments.
For heaven's sake, get a little pep. I could have gotten her that time if you picked your feet up.
Well, give me a little warning.
I did, don't you?
I can't see a doggone thing in here.
All you have to do is follow me. It's just like dragging a little sand around to walk with you.
Maybe you want to try it back here.
You shut up. If these people found you in this room, they'd give you the worst beating you ever had. They'd take your taxi license away from you.
Perry surprised himself by the ease with which he made this monstrous threat, but it seemed to have a soporific influence on his companion, for he subsided into abashed silence. The ringmaster mounted to the top of a piano and waved his hand.
Prizes gather round!
Self-consciously, the circle swayed forward. The rather pretty girl, who had mustered the nerve to come as a bearded lady, trembled with excitement, thinking to be rewarded for an evening's hideousness.
Ladies and gent performers of the circus, I am sure we will all agree that a good time has been had by all. We will now bestow honor where honor is due by bestowing the prizes. Now, fellow performers, the first prize is for that lady who has displayed this evening the most striking, becoming...
At this point, the bearded lady sighed resignedly.
And original costume...
Here the bale of hay pricked up her ears.
Now I am sure that the decision which has been agreed upon will be unanimous with all present. The first prize goes to Miss Betty Medill, the charming Egyptian snake charmer.
There was a burst of applause, chiefly masculine. And Miss Betty Medill, blushing beautifully through her olive paint, was passed up to receive her award.
And now the other prize is for that man who has the most amusing and original costume. This prize goes without dispute to a guest in our midst. In short, to the noble camel who has entertained us all by his brilliant dancing throughout the evening.
He ceased and there was a violent clapping, for it was a popular choice. The prize, a large box of cigars, was put aside for the camel as he was anatomically unable to accept it in person.
And now we will wind up the cotillion with the marriage of mirth to folly. Form for the grand wedding march, the beautiful snake charmer and the noble camel in front.
Betty skipped forward cheerily and wound an olive arm round the camel's neck. Behind them formed the procession of...
little boys.
Little girls.
Country jakes.
Fat ladies.
Thin men.
Sword swallowers.
Wild men of Borneo.
Armless wonders.
Many of them well in their cups, and all of them excited and happy and dazzled by the flow of light and color around them, and by the familiar faces, strangely unfamiliar under the bizarre wigs and barbaric paint.
Aren't you glad, Camel? Aren't you glad we're going to be married? You're going to belong to the nice snake charmer ever afterward?
The camel's front legs pranced, expressing excessive joy.
Minister! Minister! Where's the minister?
Cried voices out of the revel.
Father O'Sullivan is here somewhere, isn't he?
Father O'Sullivan, dressed as a trapeze artist and flying just about as high as one, was found and escorted to a raised dais at the head of the ball. There, a napkin was folded and tied around his neck in an effort to create an ecclesiastical effect.
Well, I just so happen to have brought me Bible. I always keep it with me for such emergencies.
Together, the snake charmer and the camel ascended the cheering aisle and stopped in front of Father O'Sullivan.
Where's your license, camel?
Perry stood uncertain.
Just give me a piece of paper, anything'll do.
Perry fumbled confusedly in his pocket, found a folded paper, and pushed it out through the camel's mouth. Holding it upside down, O'Sullivan pretended to scan it earnestly.
Ah, a special camel's license. Get your ring ready, camel.
Inside the camel, Perry turned round and addressed his worse half.
Give me a ring, for heaven's sake.
I ain't got none.
You have, I saw it.
Well, you ain't gonna take it off of my hand.
If you don't, I'll kill you.
Perry felt a huge affair of rhinestone and brass inserted into his hand.
Speak up.
I do.
He heard Betty's responses, and the sound thrilled him. Then he had pushed the rhinestone through a tear in the camel's coat and was slipping it on her finger, muttering ancient and historic words after O'Sullivan. He didn't want anyone to know about this ever. His one idea was to slip away without having to disclose his identity, for Mr. Tate had so far kept his secret well.
Embrace the bride.
Unmask, camel, and come kiss
on,
her. Camel,
Betty
kiss
turned her. To him laughingly and began to strike the cardboard muzzle. He felt his self-control giving way. He longed to surround her with his arms and declare his identity and kiss those lips that smiled only a foot away.
Hello.
When suddenly O'Sullivan had turned around the camel's marriage license, which he had been holding upside down. He produced spectacles and was studying it agonizingly.
Why, this is a genuine marriage permit.
Huh? Sure you can read?
O'Sullivan waved them to silence.
Yes, sir, this here's a genuine license, and the parties concerned One of them's this here young lady, Miss Betty Madeline. Oh. The other's Mr. Perry Parkhurst.
There was a general gasp, and a low rumble broke out as all eyes fell on the camel. Betty shrank away from him quickly, her tawny eyes giving out sparks of fury.
Are you Mr. Parkhurst? You, camel?
Perry made no answer. The crowd pressed up closer and stared at him. He stood frozen rigid with embarrassment.
You'd better speak up. This here's a very serious matter. You all know I'm a genuine minister. It would seem that you have genuinely been married.
The scene that followed will go down forever in the annals of the Tally-Ho Club.
Stout matrons fainted.
100% Americans swore.
Wild-eyed debutantes babbled in lightning groups, instantly formed and instantly dissolved.
Feverous youths swore they would kill Perry.
Or O'Sullivan.
Or themselves.
Or someone.
And O'Sullivan was besieged by a tempestuous covey of clamorous amateur lawyers, asking questions, making threats, demanding precedences, ordering the bonds annulled, and especially trying to ferret out any hint of prearrangement in what had occurred. Meanwhile, the two principals held the real center of stage. Betty Medill, or was it Betty Parkhurst, storming furiously, was surrounded by the plainer girls. The prettier ones were too busy talking about her to pay much attention to her. And over on the other side of the hall stood the camel, still intact except for his headpiece, which was dangling pathetically on his chest. Perry was earnestly engaged in making protestations of his innocence to a ring of angry, puzzled men. A girl named Marion Cloud, considered the second best belle of St. Paul, changed the gist of the situation by a remark she made to Betty.
Well, it'll all blow over, dear. The courts will annul it without question.
Betty's angry tears dried miraculously in her eye, and she looked stonily at Marion. Then she rose, and scattering her sympathizers right and left, walked directly across the room to Perry, who stared at her in terror. Again, silence crept down upon the room.
Will you have the decency to grant me 5 minutes of conversation, or wasn't that included in your plans?
He nodded, his mouth unable to form words, indicating coldly that he was to follow her. She walked out into the hall, with her chin up tilted, and headed for the privacy of one of the little card rooms. Perry started after her, but was brought to a jerky halt by the failure of his hind legs to function.
You stay here.
I can't, unless you want to get out first and let me get out.
Perry hesitated, but unable any longer to tolerate the eyes of the curious crowd, he muttered a command and the camel moved carefully from the room on its four legs. Betty was waiting for him.
Well, see what you've done. You and that crazy license. I told you you shouldn't have gotten it.
My dear girl,
don't say dear girl to me. Save that for your real wife if you ever get one after this disgraceful performance. And don't try to pretend it wasn't all arranged. Do you mean to say you didn't try to marry me?
No,
of course.
Well,
you better admit it. You tried it, and now what are you going to do? Even if this wedding, this thing can be annulled, it'll hang over me for the rest of my life.
Oh, Camel, wouldn't you like to belong to the pretty snake charmer?
Shut up!
Betty, there's only one thing to do that will really get us out clear, and that's for you to marry me.
Marry you?
Yes, really, it's the only...
Shut up! I wouldn't marry you if you were the last man...
I know, if I were the last man on Earth, but if you care anything about your reputation...
Reputation? You're a nice one to think about my reputation now. Why didn't you think about my reputation before...
Oh, very well, I'll do anything you want. Lord knows, I renounce all claims.
But I don't.
For heaven's sakes, what was that?
It's me, the camel's back.
In a minute, Perry had whipped off the camel's skin in a lax, limped object, his clothes hanging on him damply, his hand clenched tightly on an almost empty bottle, stood defiantly before them.
You brought that object in here to frighten me. You told me he was deaf, that awful person.
Don't talk that way about me, lady. I ain't no person. I'm your husband.
Husband?
Why, sure, I'm as much a husband as that gink is. That Mick didn't marry you to the camel's front. He married you to the whole camel. Why, that's my ring you got on your finger.
Ah!
With a little yelp, she snatched the ring from her finger and flung it passionately at the floor.
What's all this?
Just that you better fix me and fix me right. If you don't, I'm gonna have the same claim you got to being married to her.
That's bigamy.
Then came the supreme moment of Perry's evening.
The ultimate chance on which he risked his fortunes. He rose and looked first at Betty, where she sat weakly, aghast at this new complication, and then at the individual who swayed from side to side on his chair menacingly.
Very well, Mr. Camel's back. Or should I say hump? You can have her. Betty, I'm going to prove to you that as far as I'm concerned, our marriage was entirely accidental. I'm going to renounce utterly my rights to have you as my wife and give you to the man whose ring you accepted, your lawful husband.
There was a pause and four horror-stricken eyes were turned on him.
Goodbye, Betty. Don't forget me and your newfound happiness. I'm going to leave for the far west on the morning train. Think kindly of me, Betty.
With a last glance at them, he turned and his head rested on his chest as his hand touched the doorknob.
Goodbye.
He repeated, he turned the doorknob. But at this sound, the snakes in silk and tawny hair precipitated themselves violently toward him.
Oh, Perry, don't leave me! Perry, take me with you!
Her tears flowed damply on his neck. Calmly, he folded his arms about her.
I don't care. I love you. And if you can wake up a minister at this hour and have it done all over again, I'll go west with you.
Over her shoulder, the front part of the camel looked at the back part of the camel, and they exchanged a particularly subtle, esoteric sort of wink that only true camels can understand. Thus concludes our play. Featured in the cast were Christine Norton as Mrs. Nolak and Mrs. Tate, Jeffrey Norton as Macy, Mr. Tate the ringmaster and O'Sullivan, yours truly Jay Roth as the narrator, Bailey and the cabbie, Elizabeth Carr as Betty and Emily Tate, and Jesse Griffith as Perry. Please enjoy the rest of your afternoon. Until next time, we are the Erstwhileists signing off. Good day.